Common sense tells us that if soil is deficient in essential nutrients, the crops grown in that soil will also be deficient, as will all the people and animals that eat those crops. And so we ask, is there a common sense connection between soil fertility and human health?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1295th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Melbourne who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, back in the 1930s, 40s, and so on, we did not know if there was a connection between soil fertility and human health. But many believe there was such a connection. One who did believe was Professor William Albrecht at the University of Missouri, whose 1958 book, Soil Fertility and Human Health, put forth the hypothesis that the various conditions of the soil were responsible for variations in human health. Makes sense, common sense, don't you think? Albrecht served as chair of the University of Missouri's Department of Soil Science from 1938 to 1959, and his collected works, which were published by Acres USA as the Albrecht Papers, laid out his show-me case for soil nutrition and plant health, and as such, helped lay the groundwork for what would later come to be known as eco-agriculture, and further down the road, what came to be engraved into law as organic agriculture, and which today might be called regenerative agriculture. But was Albrecht's hypothesis right? Is there a common sense connection between soil fertility and human health? Very big question, and here to help us dig for an answer, we have Annalise Abbott, who is the author of Malabar Farm, The Rise of Sustainable Agriculture, and whose recent piece in Acres USA titled The Albrecht Hypothesis led us to this discussion today. Welcome back to the Food Chain, Annalise.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be back.
Yeah, great to have you back. Now, as a frequent contributor to Acres USA, I'm certain you must have be familiar with a connection between William Albrecht and Acres USA in the form of Charles Walters. Would you give us a brief thumbnail there?
Yes. So actually, there is a very deep connection between Acres USA and Charles Walters, because Charles Walters was friends with Albrecht back in the 1970s, and Albrecht gave most of his papers, all of his manuscripts of articles and everything that he had to Charles Walters before he died. And so it was Charles Walters that put all of these works together in the Albrecht Papers, which is those 8 volumes that Acres USA sells. And so you could almost call Albrecht, in a way, the patron saint of Acres USA, which is one reason that I did not write this article earlier. I actually had the draft of this article written in 2018, but I had been waiting to publish it because I felt kind of bad, like, because I maybe would say things more critical of Albrecht than a lot of people who read Acres say, but the editor said, no, you can publish it. So that's why I have written it at this time. So I am aware this is probably one of my more controversial articles for a lot of readers of Acres.
Which makes it interesting, don't you think? I mean, if we all agreed, it would be a very boring world. And your article came as a surprise to me, too. So, but we're not going to let people know about that surprise just yet. So Acres USA and Annalise, you've been writing for them for quite a while. Tell us a little bit about Acres USA as a publication in the milieu of agriculture publications. It's kind of unique.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of unique because Acres USA, the whole foundation maybe of Charles Walters' eco-agriculture philosophy, has always been closely intertwined with the Albrecht philosophy. So while most organic farmers put most of their emphasis on organic matter, adding organic matter to the soil, composting, things like that, Acres has always put more emphasis on mineral balance and adding mineral fertilizers to the soil. not necessarily like what you would call the NPK conventional fertilizers, but they've put a lot more emphasis on the micronutrients, the trace elements, and how important it is to have those in the soil. And so that's one thing that's made Acres maybe a little different than some of the other organic farming publications, but they've been very influential. There are a lot of people who will send you really great sounding success stories, like they have used these mineral nutrients on their soils, it has really increased their yields, they have really healthy plants. I just had a guy in Australia send me pictures a couple weeks ago. He had pictures of his land before restoration. It was like so bad, there were hardly any plants growing, and then he put down organic matter, put down mineral fertilizers, and had huge yields. So there certainly is something to be said for adding these mineral fertilizers. If the soil is deficient, it really can increase your yields, make the plants bigger, things like that.
Good to go. Well, let's take us back to the 20s and 50s, 1950s, way back then. We really didn't know if there was anything going on in the soil that could have an impact on the health of plants or the nutrient content of plants and therefore human health. And Albrecht was one of the first people that started playing with this notion. Is that true?
Yes, he is one of the first ones. So it's really interesting what was going on in the 1920s and then into the 1930s. People had just discovered vitamins. And this was a huge change in the field of nutrition, because before that, they just thought food was important because it had calories, energy, and it had protein. And that was all you needed in your food was calories and protein. And if you had that, then food could sustain life. And then they discovered in the 1920s that you actually also needed vitamins to prevent things like beriberi or scurvy or these other deficiency diseases that people were getting from not having enough vitamins. And so they had just discovered vitamins and how those were so important, and the importance of eating fruits and vegetables and animal products that have these vitamins in them. And so that was kind of the context at which people then started to realize, oh, vegetables and fruits and other foods also contain mineral nutrients. And we also need those. Those are also essential to plant health. They're essential to animal health. They're essential to human health. About 5% by dry weight of most organisms, plants, animals, humans, is made out of mineral elements. And you can't live without minerals. You can't live if you only eat carbohydrates and you never eat any minerals, you would die. And so they just discovered that minerals were really important and that there were a lot of health problems that were caused by mineral deficiency. And so because this was a new area, and then everybody was like, okay, so if the plants won't grow, if they don't get enough minerals, is it possible that maybe the plants themselves, if they manage to grow on a mineral-deficient soil, maybe they don't have enough minerals in them to feed people? And the evidence they had for this, there was a saying called poor soils make poor people, and in areas that were really impoverished and had a lot of soil erosion, the people were very unhealthy. They were suffering from a lot of deficiency diseases, and so it seemed logical to conclude that the people were so unhealthy. The people were starving, their animals were starving because the land just couldn't produce the minerals they needed. And so that was the theory that Albrecht had, that he wanted to investigate.
And Ollie Fink put it most succinctly when he raised the question, if you eat the right food, how do you know that food has the right amount of nutrients in it? Because you really don't know. If you eat a carrot is not just a carrot, is a carrot is a carrot. A carrot is a unique organism to itself, depends on where it was grown and how it was grown, so you don't know. And that was the question that people started thinking about and asking questions about. So in 1930s, Albrecht started doing some experimentation with what he called nutrition geography. What is that?
Okay, so the nutritional geography is kind of interesting, because what Albrecht did is he really liked to look at maps. And if you look at this book, The Soil Fertility and Animal Health, you will see it's just full of all these maps. He's got maps from everything, like the transmission of radio waves. Like, it's better in some parts of the country and others, even things like that. And he's got, of course, rainfall, temperature, climate, things like that. And then he also maps things like poverty and nutritional, like heart disease, dental health, things like that. And he said, well, the soils in the southeastern United States are very, what we call oxidized, they're very leached because there's a lot of rainfall and the temperatures are warmer, so organic matter doesn't accumulate as much. So the soils are generally considered to be poor. And he's like, oh, and those areas also have higher levels of bad dental health or poverty and things like that. And so he's like, being a soil scientist, he's like, well, there is a correlation. Therefore, it must be the soil that is causing all these things.
And that was that notion was somewhat buttressed by the fact that the U.S. Navy did a study on dental health in the 1940s, World War II. People from all over the country joining the Navy, and the Navy dentist looked into their mouths and said, so these folks from the Midwest appear to be much healthier than these folks from the forest lands. And so Albrecht drew some conclusions from that, did he not?
Yes, he did. Although it is interesting to note that they all had really bad teeth because New England region was the worst. They had an average of 13 cavities per person. And then the Midwest, which was the best, they still had 8 cavities per person. So really the Navy discovered that people had bad teeth.
A good discovery. But, you know, that whole notion of mineral deficiency in teeth was also the subject of the work of Weston A. Price, who was a dentist as well.
Yes, what Weston Price did is what has sometimes been called nutritional anthropology. So his hypothesis was that it was diet that caused dental decay. And so he traveled all over the world, took pictures of teeth from people of all sorts of different people groups that were eating all sorts of different diets. But all of them that were eating natural foods that were produced on their own land had really healthy teeth. And then the ones that were eating what he called the white man's diet, which was a lot of white flour, white sugar, not many fresh fruits and vegetables, they had really bad teeth, regardless of what their genetic background was. So he concluded that dental health wasn't genetic, it was environmental, and diet affected it. Even if somebody had good teeth and then they started eating these white flour, white sugar, this deficient diet, then they would start to have tooth problems.
Which somewhat parallels Albrecht's observations as well, correct?
It does, but the critical difference is that Price was looking specifically at diet, so he really said nothing about soil where things were grown. It was purely diet, and according to his hypothesis that white flour was the problem, it wouldn't really matter how good of the soil you grew the wheat on, you still lose all of those minerals and vitamins by refining the wheat into white flour. And so they often get confused in the soil and health literature, but that is the critical difference, is that Price was looking at eating whole foods versus processed foods, whereas Albrecht wasn't really taking into account what kind of foods these people were eating, or even if they were grown on their own soils. He really knew none of that when he's looking at this dental data and other data.
Mm-hmm. Just a quick parenthetical, I wrote a World War II history and interviewed a lot of sailors, and I asked the officers aboard this specific World War II ship where he got the best sailors from, kind of, you know, the same, along the same lines as Albrecht's question. And he said, oh, without a doubt, the best sailors always come from the Midwest farms. And I'll take a Midwest farm boy anytime. And I often wondered if there was some kind of parallel there, just with respect to basic nutrition that one would get from the farm. But that's just my thought. So we're going to take a quick break. Folks, the big question of the day: is there a common sense connection between soil fertility and human health? It would certainly seem so, don't you think? If it's not in the soil, how could it be in the plants? And if it's not in the plants, and it's not in us, and then what happens? Oh my goodness. We're working that through with Annalise Abbott, who is the author of Malabar Farm, Rise of Sustainable Agriculture, and many more, right back.
now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are back, and we're talking about the relationship between soil, soil nutrition, what's in the soil, and what's in us. Is there a correlation there? It would certainly seem to be. It's just a common sense, but maybe not. Well, that's what William Albrecht postulated, hypothesized back in the 1930s and 40s and 50s. A long run at the University of Missouri. Did he not have, 30, 40 years there?
Yeah, he did.
So he was quite the soil scientist. But as a soil scientist, you know, in looking at some of his experiments, you kind of scratch your head. And this, I think, is probably where you might get in trouble with some of the Acres USA folks.
Yes, yes. This is where I would disagree with some of them, because I completely agree that Albrecht was a really good soil scientist, especially by the standards of his time. And he did a lot of really good research, for example, inoculating legumes with the rhizobacteria that you need for them to fix nitrogen. He did some really foundational research on that. He did a lot on the importance of calcium as a plant nutrient. He did a lot of really good soil studies. And so that's why I say he did a lot of really good work, and a lot of the things in the Albrecht papers are really, you know, useful. And even his soil balancing theories, which I don't talk about here, there's you know, difference of agreement in soil scientists on whether or not those were really valid, but nobody thinks they were bad. Like, you're not going to hurt your soil by balancing it. So nobody, you know, nobody really finds too much fault with his other research. But the problem was when he started talking about nutrition and things like that, he was really going outside of his area of expertise. He really had no training in nutrition. He really had no training in doing animal studies, which was what he started branching into. So when he started doing these studies with feeding animals and with nutrition, he was kind of stepping outside of his own discipline. And so that's where his studies may not have been designed as well as somebody who had more experience with animal feeding studies would have designed them. Mm-hmm. So one of the most important ones that he felt that he did was in 1942 with a graduate student called Eugene McLean. And so what they did was they picked five different soil types in Missouri, because Missouri is in a really interesting part of the United States. It's kind of on this boundary between the West and the East, if you want to put it that way, and it has some really different soil types, some of which are much more fertile than others. And so he found a farm in each of five geographically distinct regions in Missouri, and he planted lespedeza, which is it's a legume. It's sort of like alfalfa. It's really nutritious. And so he did this feeding rabbits, and lespedeza is a really good feed for rabbits. And then he discovered that when you grew it on some of these soils that were more depleted, the rabbits were not as strong and healthy as when they grew it on the richer soils. And so he's like, it is the soil. But the problem was, other researchers looked at his data and they said, but you didn't look at the botanical composition of your hay. So maybe this hay that you got from the poor soils, maybe it wasn't even lespedeza. Maybe it was mostly just grass, which isn't as nutritious for rabbits. And so the criticism wasn't that, you know, good soils make better feed for rabbits. That was pretty obvious. The question was it because the lespedeza itself had less minerals in it, or was it just because there was less of it and there was more grass, which wasn't as nutritious? And that's what he didn't prove, was that the mineral content of a single species changed on different soil types.
And this is at a time when it would seem like we would know how to do studies. So, you know, you have a control group and you have an experimental group, and yet both are rigidly managed so that you know what you're doing there. And yet they didn't. And that is a criticism that you have of Albrecht's work then?
Yeah, because like I said, he didn't have much experience with animal feeding studies, and I don't think that he worked with nutritionists. I could be wrong about that, but he also had a very small number of animals. He only had like 8 per treatment. And the big thing was that he didn't analyze the mineral content. So he's making all these assumptions that it's minerals, and he never did mineral tests on either the soils or the plants he's feeding the rabbits.
Wow.
So
okay.
He comes to all these conclusions that it's the minerals, but he never actually tested minerals at all.
And one of the conclusions that he jumped to was concerning the difference between protein and grasslands of the Midwest and the carbonaceous forests of the East. And looking at them, he made the comment that no human life or cow's life could survive on foods grown on leached soils. And yet the whole population of the East Coast was essentially living on those soils.
Yes. So that is something where I think Albrecht was completely out of his league. I think Native Americans that lived in the East would have been very offended because he said things like, you know, oh, no human life form could live there. And obviously there were a lot of people living there before Europeans came. So he was a little, and the other thing, he really didn't apparently know that much about plant science because he talked about like how plants grow. He's like, oh, they build their carbonaceous woody mass first and then they add on the proteins and vitamins and minerals on top. And that's not how plants grow at all, because young tender plants are going to be much richer in protein and minerals and vitamins than older woody stems. They build woody stems as they get older. So he was not really understanding plant growth and development. And even at that time, I think plant scientists would probably have disagreed with his theories there because he didn't really understand how plants grow.
So there seemed to be a disassociation between soil science and plant science. It's almost...
Yes, and there still is to some extent. I mean, a lot of soil scientists do not study plants, and most plant scientists do not study soil, and it's still like that today.
Interesting. So I suppose they might tend to throw eggs at each other across the campus, and you're a soil science and I'm a plant science and we shouldn't be having lunch together or something. Kind of bizarre. But at any rate, what Albrecht did do with his research was stimulate interest in the whole concept of this relationship between soil nutrition and human health. And the USDA picked up some of that interest as well, correct?
Yes. So this is what's really interesting, because a lot of people would say, like, oh, you know, the government is opposed to these kind of ideas, or conventional agriculture is opposed to these kind of ideas. But that actually happened much later. In the 1940s, this was the cutting edge. This was the hot topic. This was the thing that everybody was like, ooh, we want to do research on this and see if there really is a connection. And so the USDA was in the process of establishing laboratories all over the United States. And one of the last ones they established, they called the Plant, Soil, and Nutrition Laboratory. And they established that in 1939 on the campus of Cornell University in New York. And so what this was, an entire laboratory, government funded, to test whether there was these associations between the soil and health. And so they did a ton of really well-designed experiments. One of the really good advantages of this laboratory was that it was interdisciplinary. They had nutritionists, they had animal scientists, they had plant scientists, they had soil scientists all collaborating on these research projects. So one of the first things they did, they looked at yield, you know, at mineral data from plants grown in various states, and they said, hey, there are some differences. Maybe it is the soil. And so then they dug up the soils from these states and actually shipped them all to Ithaca, New York, and then they grew plants in them, and they discovered, hey, they all have the same mineral content. And they're like, so maybe climate has a difference, but it's not really just the soil, it's actually the climate, because when you take all these different soils, but you grow them in the same climate, you have the same mineral content in the plants that you grow.
So this is where things get really interesting. So we'll back up just a little. This was the vitamin C study, correct? Of tomatoes?
Yes. Yes, so this was interesting because that was another theory, was that you'd have more vitamins if you had more minerals. And so they had analyzed tomato samples from California, Wisconsin, and then grown there in New York. And they had quite different levels. Like the ones in California had the highest vitamin C by quite a lot. And so they're like, well, it must be the soils in California. So yeah, they brought all those soils and they grew them, and they all had the same vitamin C content when they were grown in the same place. And so then they're like, well, it can't be the soil. And so they finally discovered, after doing a lot of experiments, that it was sunlight. And so the picture I have at the front of this article is showing they actually put Muslim cloth over developing tomatoes in some of the plants to see how that affected their vitamin C content, and it made a big difference. So it turned out that sunlight was what affected the vitamin C of tomatoes much more than soil type.
So this is a very big deal. Because
this is showing that, you know, Albrecht's idea that was all the soil, what this is basically showing is that it's a lot more complicated. Like, Albrecht took a very complex relationship and tried to say it was really simple, cause and effect, soil to mineral content or soil to nutritional quality. And was they actually discovered that this is really complex. There are so many different interacting factors. You can't really simplify it like that.
Though we wish we could, because it would make a lot easier to write books and stuff about it, correct?
Oh, yes.
There you go. But that's not the way it is. Also, USDA did I guess they sponsored a very interesting cow study at Michigan State University. Would you go through that one, too? Because I think that one's very illustrative of what we're talking about here as well.
Yeah, so this MSU cow study at Michigan State University, this was probably like the biggest and best, what Albrecht would have called a biological assay of soil fertility.
Wait a minute, just a sec. Biological assay. Explain that term because it's a good one.
Okay, so the reason he called it a biological assay of soil fertility, that was what he called animal feeding studies, like the rabbit studies that he did. His thought was that the differences in nutritional quality would show up in the health of the animals, and so that's why he called it a biological assay.
So if it's in the soil, then it should be revealed in the animal, the body of the animal then.
Yeah. The whole idea that poor soil makes poor people or poor animals, the idea would be then if poor soil makes poor animals, then you can tell that just by doing a feeding study. You'll know there's something not good about the soil if the animals aren't as healthy as ones eating the same kind of food grown on a different soil.
Wow. Okay. So the Michigan State study had found a farm with two different kinds, with a neglected farm with neglected soils, correct?
Yes. So this is really interesting because they started this study in 1945, which was like the peak of the soil and health discussion. This was like the hot topic everybody was talking about. And they got a big grant from the American Dairy Association or something. I don't remember exactly which organization, but they got this big grant to do a study on a current topic on dairy cows. And so they said, hey, soil and health is the topic. So there were two parts of the hypothesis, Albrecht's hypothesis. The one was that there were the geographical differences, and the other one was that fertilizer made a big difference, so that you could have these depleted soils, but if you fertilize them properly with the right minerals, then the animals would be much healthier than if you didn't fertilize them.
Which sounds very commonsensical, does it not?
Oh, yeah, it does, because obviously you do have increases in yields. Like, if the soil is deficient and the plants are hardly growing, if you put on the right fertilizers, you will have a huge increase in yield, and the plants will be much healthier, and you'll have a lot more of them.
But that does not relate to the nutrient content.
Well, that's what the Michigan State people wanted to find out. So they knew they'd have lower yields, but they found this farm, and this is on kind of a sandy-ish soil in pretty much in south central Michigan. It's near Battle Creek at the Kellogg Biological Station. And so they had this farm that they estimated had been not fertilized for over 100 years. It was what they called a really depleted, worn-out farm, just grew scrubby stuff. It was like the worst a farm in that part of Michigan could get. It was in bad shape. And they're like, this is the perfect test. This is poor soil if we've ever seen it. And so if animals are going to suffer from eating feed grown on this is the test. And so they got together an interdisciplinary team. They had plant scientists, they had soil scientists, they had dairy scientists. They even had nutritionists doing studies on rats. So they had all of these different kinds of scientists, and they're like, we are going to make sure we remove all the other variables so that the soil fertility is the only variable. So they planned, what they did was they fertilized half of the land of this depleted farm and then not the other half, and then they had two herds of cows. They made sure they were like half sisters so that the cows were closely genetically related, so you couldn't say it was variation because the cows came from different lines. And then they made sure they fed them a balanced diet. The dairy nutritionist balanced the diet. It was all from food grown on there, but they made sure that it was all crops that could be grown on both soils because they couldn't grow many legumes on the depleted soils. They were too acidic. It needed lime, so they couldn't grow a lot of alfalfa. But so they grew grain. They grew corn. They grew some soybeans. They grew a lot of grassy haze, timothy, and they grew all that, and then they balanced it so that it was a nutritionally complete diet for dairy cattle because they wanted to make sure it wasn't just, we're not feeding them the same kind of feed. They wanted to make sure it was the exact same kind of plants growing on both.
And so we have a situation where when we have plant scientists and soil scientists and all kinds of scientists, removing all the variables to make certain that what you learn is going to be what's there. And it was the conclusion was amazing and amazed everybody, did it not?
Oh, yeah, it surprised most of the scientists in the study because they were sure that the cows that were being fed food from the depleted soil were going to be healthier. And it turned out there was no significant difference. All the cows were healthy. They were all equally healthy. And then they were milking the cows and feeding the milk to rats, because this was another claim that some of, not Albrecht himself, I don't think, but some other people went further and said, well, if the cow isn't eating good food, then her milk is going to be deficient. And you can't, her milk isn't going to really be milk. It's not really going to be nutritionally good to drink. And so they discovered that the rats drinking the milk from both herds of cows were equally healthy. There was no significant differences anywhere. And I mean, usually with a study with no significant difference, you don't always get the results of that published because it's kind of boring. But in this case, it really meant a lot, because it showed that it actually didn't matter. There was the huge increase in yields where the soil was fertilized, but as far as the health of the cows, there really was not a connection.
So no difference in the nutrient content of the crops and of the cows.
Nope. Because what they discovered was that really, you see, plants can't grow if they don't have the minerals they need. They are essential for the plants. And so if there aren't enough minerals to grow a plant, the plant won't grow. It will grow smaller and be stunted.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but I want to pick up the conclusion when we get back. This is The Food Chain, and this is Fun with Annalise Abbott and you, right back.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Polyface Farms, Joel Salatin.
Few how-to books could be more appropriate for our times than MetroFarm, a truly comprehensive manual. MetroFarm makes the whole embedded food system doable. It's a must-read.
USDA Director Bud Kerr.
Big book. Metro Farm describes the agronomic, economic, and managerial concepts required to generate substantial profits from agricultural locales near metropolitan areas.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning Metro Farm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to knoxgardenbox.com. That's K-N-O-X, gardenbox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place while the USS Dale steamed through the Bering Sea, January 1943.
We took some terrible waves up there. One time a big groundswell rolled us over so far I thought we'd never make it back. I was on the lee deck when the ship went over into that roll. Luckily, I was able to grab onto a bulkhead handrail, and when the Dale went over, my feet left the deck. I hung there with nothing between my feet and the ocean but air. I was scared. She went over on her beam, paused for a minute, then she shuddered and shook because one of her propellers was out of the water and thrashing air. Slowly, very slowly, she rolled back toward the vertical, and my feet found the deck again. That wave scared the devil out of me.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it.
on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Today, folks, we're taking on a very interesting question with Annalise Abbott, who is the author of Malabar Farm, The Rise of Sustainable Agriculture, and a recent article in Acres USA entitled The Albrecht Hypothesis. And the hypothesis was, in essence, that there was a relation, a common sense relationship between the nutrient content of soil and the health of people that ate from that soil. But is that true? And from the experimentation that was conducted from, the late 1920s all the way up through 1950s, 1960s, that was the question. Is this a possibility? Is this true? And essentially, it's not true. Is that the way I read it, Annalise Abbott?
Yeah, so in that sense of saying that you could have two carrots and grown, if they're the same variety of carrot and you grow them on different soils, the one might be, you know, packed full of minerals and the other one might be just, you know, water. It may have no minerals in it at all or no vitamins in it at all. The evidence did not really support that. So it turns out that it was a lot more complicated, that soil itself, it affects yields, it affects plant health. And so fertilizing your soil is really important to grow healthy plants and to make them, you know, strong, productive, resistant to insects. But if your soil is not healthy, you're just not going to get many plants. But the plants that do grow are not necessarily going to be, like, deficient. They're not going to be, like, empty plants with no nutritional value. What they actually discovered was that the nutritional value of, say, a carrot can indeed vary a lot. But what is going to affect that is going to be the variety that is grown, and then maybe the climate, which is something you can't really change in a given location, but it's not necessarily going to be the soil fertility. So they've bred, like, some of the, you know, newer varieties of vegetables and stuff may have lower vitamin and mineral contents, but that's from breeding because they've just been breeding for yields and not for nutrient density. But it really has more to do with that than it does with the soils they were grown on. And so that's what the researchers at that USDA laboratory at Cornell, they eventually focused most of their efforts on plant breeding. So they're actually the ones that have developed those orange cauliflowers that you can buy that are full. They have a ton more vitamin A than white cauliflower. That's one of the things that they developed at this USDA laboratory, which is still at Cornell.
What was the reaction of agriculture to this realization that, you know, that there is not a common sense correlation between the nutrient content of soil and the nutrient content of crops that people eat?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is that it just kind of faded away. Like, they just didn't talk about it anymore because the fertilizer companies were really hoping it was true because they were hoping they could sell more fertilizers. And so it just they just kind of stopped talking about it, stopped writing about it, except for some people, like Albrecht, continued to say this, and then, of course, this was picked up by Charles Walters, Acres USA, later on, but often they only saw the earlier part of the story. They didn't see the later part of the story in the 1950s, where most scientists decided this was kind of a dead end, and they didn't do much more research on it. They moved on to other topics, like plant breeding, things like that.
So then with respect to soil science, where does that leave soil science in?
Well, as far as soil science, like soil fertility is still very important for growing. Like I said, it's really important for yields and plant health and all that. But I guess it takes off that, like, fear that if you didn't put the right nutrients on your soil, you're going to get a deficiency disease from eating your plants because they didn't have enough minerals in them. That's not really a valid concern.
Now, there are a lot of nutritionists these days we hear making that claim.
Yes, and that's why I wanted to write this article, because I feel like they are, I guess, maybe, I wouldn't want to say, like, scaring people, but I feel like people are being unnecessarily worried that their food is not going to be healthy. Just they're, like, afraid that it's just because it looks like food, it's not actually going to be healthy. And I do think like I said, a lot of the commercially grown varieties of things like carrots or tomatoes probably have lower mineral content because they've been bred that way, because they've just been bred for yield, so they have more water in them or whatever. And so some heirloom varieties may have higher mineral or vitamin contents. But I don't think people need to worry as much about whether the vegetables have the minerals in them as to whether they're eating enough vegetables. Because really, like going back to those people in the South that were so poor and they had all these deficiency diseases, it turns out that the problem was they were eating deficient diet. Like they were just eating cornmeal and salt pork. They were not eating fruits and vegetables. They were not drinking milk. They were actually not eating what they called the protective foods that had the vitamins and minerals in them. And so it wasn't, they were poor because the soil was poor, but it was more like they didn't have money to buy the food they needed, or they, you know, the soil was so poor they couldn't grow the kinds of plants they needed. It wasn't so much direct mineral deficiency.
So then with respect to the quality of the soil, the nutrient content of the soil, it did have an impact on those people from the South because they could not probably grow the crops that they needed to grow to be healthy. They had to rely on what could be grown in those soils.
Yeah, or maybe they were just growing cotton and they were just buying food. That happened a lot too. But again, that's more complex than Albrecht's proposing. It was just this simple relation that they're just eating food from the soil and that's what makes them deficient, as it being maybe the soil is so depleted they can't grow legumes or enough feed to feed a cow, or maybe it's just, it, you know, they aren't choosing to grow it, but for whatever reason, there is a connection between soil fertility and prosperity in that sense. But the direct connection that mineral deficiencies because of the soil were causing those health problems, that's what they didn't find.
How did this realization impact the ongoing conflict between what some people call conventional agriculture and others call organic agriculture, which, as I saw it, you know, Albrecht was one of the those people who advocated for ecological agriculture, whereas, you know, some people in his department at of soil of agriculture at Missouri probably thought, geez, this is crazy. We should be going with these modern technology. So how did this realization affect that conversation that our country has had over its agriculture?
Well, I think in a lot of ways it was a negative effect, because it kind of discredited Albrecht. I think this is one of the reasons that he was discredited, was because he wasn't really willing to admit that his experiments might have been flawed. He still held to this hypothesis, I think up until he died. I don't think he ever really changed his views. And so that gave, unfortunately, then people continued to say this, like, oh, you know, the milk might not actually be nutritious and the vegetables might not actually be nutritious if your soil's not balanced. And then this gave proponents of conventional agriculture a lot of fodder. They're like, well, that's silly. Science doesn't support that. Therefore, organic farming is bad. And it gave them some fodder to discredit organic farming, because people were not necessarily willing to accept that maybe they had to modify this hypothesis a little and say, you know, soil fertility affects plant health, but there's not that direct connection mineral-wise to animal and human health. And so I think it was a negative impact because they were not really willing to change their views much over the years about this one issue.
And so conventional agriculture and organic agriculture kind of went their separate ways. And yet today, because of market forces, I believe, it seems to be that conventional agriculture is coming to be more accepting of organic agriculture, simply by virtue of the fact that that's what consumers want, is food grown without pesticides and herbicides. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think definitely there's becoming a lot more acceptance of organic food. A lot more people are wanting organic food because it doesn't have those levels of pesticides, and a lot of people are worried about pesticides and their effect on human health. I think that's the biggest thing driving the organic food. For me, also, I think organic farming is good because it does put more emphasis on soil health, and I do think soil health is very important for a lot of reasons, environmental reasons, and it does grow healthier plants. It helps eliminate the need for so many pesticides. So I definitely think there's a lot to be said for soil health. I don't know. There is not really any evidence that organic food has higher mineral content or anything, unless it's a different variety. Like I said, the same variety grown organically or conventionally is not really going to be nutritionally different. But to me, that's not what really matters. It's about what's being done environmentally, that this is better for the soil, this is better for the plants, and then it doesn't have those pesticides in it. So I think that's the merit of organic food. And I think that's what people selling organic food should emphasize, not trying to make claims that it has a major nutrient difference when it doesn't. So far, we haven't seen that with studies.
But this makes a very interesting question for those who want to optimize their nutritional intake by virtue of the foods they eat. So the question then becomes, which varieties should I buy? Where is it grown? It's kind of like, it's almost talking about wine here. Am I wrong?
Well, yeah, it can be like that. It can be, very different depending on which variety, which location, and all that. But like I said earlier, I don't think people really need to worry about it too much. I think the big thing is the overall diet. So if you were to just say, oh, I'm going to eat organic white flour instead of conventional white flour, that's still going to be deficient. That's not going to be any healthier for you than eating conventional white flour. So what all of these nutritional studies, or like when Sir Albert Howard was citing studies where people ate organic food were healthier, it was all because they were eating a healthy, balanced diet. They were eating whole grains. They were eating lots of vegetables. They were drinking milk. They were not eating white flour or white sugar. And so I think what it really comes down to is a holistic diet. So you don't want to just substitute, one thing for another if it's the same kind of food. You want to have organic produce, organic milk if you can, but you also want to have a healthier, less processed diet. And usually the less processed it is, the more the food is in their natural forms, the more of those innate vitamins and minerals it's going to have.
As you look back at these characters of our earlier agriculture, or early, I guess you would call them early science agriculture, because these are people who are trying to, figure out what's really going on. Do you think a lot of them used their science to justify their theories instead of... Is that a fair question?
I think all scientists do to some extent, to be honest. So I certainly wouldn't criticize Albrecht for that any more than any other scientist. Like, I'm doing a lot of research on the history of science in general, and really most scientists do try to design experiments to get the results that they want. I'm not saying the results aren't valid. They are valid, but there is definitely personal bias. It has a lot to do with what is studied and how experiments are designed, and to some extent, what conclusions they come to.
And if you're looking to prove what you want to prove, it's a lot easier than to prove what you don't want to prove, I guess. So, in your looking back at these people, and like Albrecht, there were pioneers, were they not?
Oh, yes, definitely. And that's why I think we need to give some grace to somebody like Albrecht. Like, you can say, his methods were kind of flawed and all that, but he was really one of the first people doing this kind of research. So, of course, it was refined and made better after him. But pioneers often do make mistakes. It's very rare for somebody to be, like, the first to do something and then for people later on to agree with everything that first person did, because usually when you're the first person doing something, you're really passionate about it and you may kind of jump to too much of a conclusion. You may exaggerate the results, and then usually it takes later research to kind of bring it back into bounds. This happens with almost every new technology. And so in that sense, I don't think Albrecht was, any more to blame for his, exuberance about his theory than anybody else who comes up with a new theory.
And it would certainly explain the faults in his very early experiments where, what if we do this and what if we do that and we'll see what happens. But there's so many variables. I think there really is no yes or no here, is there?
No, there isn't. I think the big takeaway is that this is really complicated, and you can't just say a simple thing like, oh, put down this fertilizer, your plants will be more nutritious. It's much, much more complicated.
So, the question for Annalise Abbott. Do you think there really is a common sense connection between soil fertility and human health?
I think there is in the broad sense that I was saying, in that if you have a healthy soil and you'll grow lots of healthy plants, they'll be bigger, they'll be more productive, there'll be a lot more of good food to eat if your soil is healthy, and so then you'll be healthier if you eat. Like if I'm growing my garden and I have lots more big, you know, healthy vegetables that I get to eat, and so I eat more vegetables because my soil was healthy and made more vegetables, and so I'm healthier because I ate more vegetables. I think in that sense there is a connection. I don't think it's like necessarily like, oh, if the plants are healthier, the vegetables will be healthier than if the plants were sickly. It's just there will be more vegetables. So there is a connection, but it's not strictly about fertility. It's more of a holistic connection, I think, than you can't reduce it to say, oh, they're healthier because they have more minerals. It's just it's better for everyone if the plants are healthy.
And there you go. We always like things to be simple, but sometimes they're not. And when it comes to the growth and development of plants and people, it isn't simple. Annalise Abbott, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be talking soon about Malabar Farm. Thank you all for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.